Tonight's shiur is Masechet Chul and Daf Ayin Zayin, and we will begin on Taf Ayin Vov on the base, two lines from the bottom. In the previous shiur, we have learned in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, explaining the Mishnah that if there is a fracture in the leg, certain different places on the leg, then it may be considered a situation of Abraham Dodo, which the Mishnah said the halacha by Abraham Dodo is that aver is may not be eaten, but the rest of the animal may be eaten, unless, as we learned in the previous Mishnah, most of the aver is covered by flesh. Then it's not considered aver hamadodol, and it may be eaten. So now the Gemara begins with the following situation. Hamagidin the rakin dosla kamei the rava. There was a fracture in the leg, and it was covered with Abraham Dovel. It was covered with Gidin. It was covered with veins that at that point were soft. And the question is, are those Gidin considered valid to cover up the Basar? Amarava, Mamai Lechishlohu. Why should we not consider these Gidin as full-fledged Basar? Chada. For one, we have what Rabbi Yochanan taught us. The Rabbi Yochanan taught us Gidin should soif on the hakshos that nim aleim the Pesach. We know what halacha is that on Pesach, in order to be able to be yotze the mitzvah karen Pesach, one has to register as a member of the group that's eating the karen Pesach, and every member has to have enough meat that's kazayis. So the question that the Gemara discusses is if there isn't a kezias of meat available to this person registering to the Karan Pesach, but there is a kezias of these soft gidim that ultimately will get hard. A machlokes rishonim, which gidim are being referred to. Some rishonim say it's the gidim around the neck. That's the pshat that most rishonim actually say. Some Rishonim say it's the Gidin on the leg. Others say it's the Gidin around the Shedra, around the spinal cord. So Rabbi Yochanan said that we could rely on these Gidin, those Gidin are considered Basar, and one could register to be a member of a Chabura eating a Karan Pesach if he'll get a Kazayas of Gidin. Void, and another reason he said that Rabbi said we could be lenient, is because the Torah chasa amonis Yisrael. We know the Torah is concerned about our financial situation, and therefore, by saying in our case, or actually the same in Karan Pesach, that the Gidin are considered basar, we come with a kula. What can register for Karan Pesach? This aver will not be considered an aver hamadodol, and because the Torah is concerned about our financial situation, therefore we could be lenient. And as the Mefarshim point out, even though certainly what is considered meat for covering Pesach may not necessarily be considered meat for covering up a fractured bone, some Mefarshim say from here we see that actually the criteria for both are indeed the same. Others say that the point in both of them is that we look at the current situation. And therefore, regarding Karan Pesach, would a person have to eat a kazayis basar if right now this is edible meat, therefore it's considered valid for the Karan Pesach? Similarly, right now, if this is soft, it's considered acceptable to cover up the fracture. And as the Mefarshim explained, what the Gemara meant to say is, number one, this question of Gidin Shesoif and Lahakshois, as we're going to see, is a machloikis of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. And the Gemara at this point is stating that it is the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan that we could consider it like basar, coupled with the fact that when we have a question, should we follow the lenient opinion of Rabbi Yochanan or the stringent opinion of Reish Lakish, HaTorah Chasa Mamonim Shal Yisrael, and we'll follow the lenient opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. From where do we know that HaTorah Chasa Mamonim Shal Yisrael, that the Torah is concerned with Klai Yisrael's financial situation? So there are two sources given. One is the halacha. We know that if there's a concern that there's a nega in a house, so the kohen comes to examine the house, and the pasuk says, "Ufinu es habayis," they should remove the kelim from the house. And the question is, which kelim does the Torah mean? It can't mean the klimatris, the metal kelim, because we know that the metal kelim are anyway not. Even if they become tamei, we could take to the mikvah. It must be the kli cheres, which the kli cheres are not able to become tar by taking to the mikvah. So the Torah says that the kohen tells us, "Ufinu es hakelim, ufinu es habayis." Take out those kelim that they should not become irreversibly tamei. Even though we know that the kli cheres are very inexpensive, still the Torah was concerned for those inexpensive kelim. Another source is we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Klal Yisrael were in the Midbar and there was a concern about water, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu to take water out of the stone, and he says, "Vayitzeis l'mayim min ha'sela v'shkisa es ha'edav v'shkirom." So we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was concerned even for the animals of Klal Yisrael and was willing to make a nace. And Moshe Rabbeinu should speak or hit the rack and water will come out, just that Klal Yisrael should have water even just for the animals. Again, why? Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is concerned for Klal Yisrael's well-being and their financial well-being, and their animals should not go to loss. The Mefarshim explain why the Torah has to give us both of these sources. So the Mefarshim explain that on one hand, the lesson of Ufinu es habayis is a very powerful lesson. As we said, we're talking about inexpensive kli cheres. Furthermore, we're talking about an individual. It's just one person's home. And moreover, that individual is an individual who is not even such a great person. Because were he a great person, he wouldn't have negoyim coming to his house. Yet the Torah is so concerned about him. On the other hand, from the animal, from one hand, we're talking about the rabbin. All of Klal Yisrael's animals were in danger if they didn't have water. Yet on the other hand, there it wasn't just that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was concerned for their water. There HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a nes, which we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu avoid, which nesim are always avoided. Furthermore, the Mefarshim go on to discuss, perhaps from it depends what is our attitude, what is the halacha's attitude actually to Tzar Baal Chayim. If Tzar Baal Chayim is a Doraisa, so certainly there's a concern for the behemoths. I saw actually a different source how we know that a Torah Chosa Mamonim Shi Yisrael. That interesting to note that we know that Pesach, Sukkot, both are long Yom Tovim. Pesach is a 7-day Yontem Midaraisa. Sukkot is an 8-day Yontem Midaraisa. Whereas Shavuos is only a 1-day Yontem. Why? Because Shavuos was in the time of the year where they would gather the crops, and the Torah was concerned that they shouldn't lose work time. And that's why the Torah only declared that Shavuos should be a 1-day Yontem. The reason that explanation is not typically given, explained in Mefarshim, because it's based on assuming that doing melacha on Chol HaMoed is awesome deraisa under all circumstances, which we know is actually a question in the halacha. Amalei Rav Papa L'Rava, Rav Shimon Bar Lakish, we have Rav Shimon Bar Lakish's opinion is that Gidin, Shesayfon L'Hakshois, are not considered basar. Visura deraisa. And furthermore, we're dealing with an Issa Deraisa. And as the Mefarshim explained, we wanted to use the concept, the Gemara wanted to use the concept of a Torah Chosa of a Monim Shal Yisrael. That's why when we have this question, we should take a lenient opinion. But says the Gemara, we can't say, and we can't rely on that concept of a Torah Chosa of a Monim Shal Yisrael when we're dealing with a question of an Issa Deraisa, which in Issa Deraisa, we always go L'chumra. That Amrit, my Leichishloi, and you want to take, says the Gemara, a lenient opinion, ishtik. So he remained silent. Asked the Gemara, v'mayt ishtik, why did he remain silent? V'am Rava, don't we have a statement that Rava made? Hilchos kavaseid Rish Lakish v'lokish b'ani talas, the halacha follows Rish Lakish only in three different opinions. One is regarding the chalitza of a woman who's pregnant. One is if somebody divides up his estate while he still is alive, that he has to use to every person a lashon matana. Third is that a kinyan haperis is not considered a kinyan haguf. But otherwise, says the Gemara, that we always follow the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. So why are you so quick to follow the opinion of Rish Lakish? Answers the Gemara, Shani Hacha, the Hadabei Rabbi Yochanan Lagavid Rish Lakish. For we find that Rabbi Yochanan ultimately also agreed with Rish Lakish's opinion. Because the Gemara we're going to have later in our Masechta, on Daf Kuf Chav Beis, Amar Beis, we will find Rish Lakish asking Rabbi Yochanan if the Or, Ha'egel Harach, the skin by the head of a calf, which will eventually become hard, is it susceptible to tumas oichlin while it's still soft? And Rabbi Yochanan said, no, it's not. And Rish Lakish challenges Rabbi Yochanan, are you not Rabbi Yochanan that holds that something that is soft now, even though it's ultimately going to become hard, should be considered like basar? To which Rabbi Yochanan, and there's a Mishnah even that corroborates that opinion, to which Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, Al takni teni b'loshin yochad anishay nisay. Don't irritate me by using that Mishnah as a raya, because in my opinion, that Mishnah represents the opinion of a yochid, and the halacha is not like that Mishnah. So we see that even Rabbi Yochanan ultimately agreed that the halacha is that seif lahakshis, something that's going to become ultimately hard, is already considered hard now and cannot be considered basar. Says the Gemara, Hahu nishbar ha'etzem v'yatzu l'chutz. There was a situation where the bone broke and part of it was coming out of the hole. The shtakel kurtz minei, but a part of the bone fell off. And there are two opinions how to learn this Gemara. Most Rishonim learn the Gemara as follows. That even though we are learning, and we'll continue to learn, that if most of the fractured bone is covered, then the halacha is that it's not a problem. Perhaps, when not only is the bone fractured, but part of the bone is missing, there it may be that it's an issue even if it's mostly covered. That's one way to Rishonim explain the Gemara. Another way to Rishonim explain the Gemara is as follows. There was a bone that was fractured, and there was not enough basar to cover that bone. However, part of the bone then chipped off, and now because the bone was smaller, there was enough basar to cover that fracture. Do we say that since at the beginning there wasn't enough flesh to cover that fracture, it remains not kosher? Or do we say that as long as it's now covered mainly, it's fine? Asal kamei d'abaya, the question was brought to Abaya, shayet l'srigli, and he waited 3 yom tovim. The way Mefarshim explained is that typically on the Shalosh Regolim, or on the Shabbosim before the Shalosh Regolim, all the great Talmid Chachamim would get together, and that's when they had an opportunity to discuss outstanding halachic issues. Others explain that they used to get together, rigli means that they used to get together at the yard side of the great Talmid Chachamim, and that would be the occasion where they could discuss halachic issues. Obviously, according to these opinions, it wasn't that they kept the meat. The meat was already disposed of. The issue here was to decide the halacha if such a question were to come up again. Amleir Adab Amasna, Zil Kamei, and they still did not come up with an answer to this question. So if Adab Amasna said, Zil kamei de Rava b'reid Rav Yosef b'chama, go ask this question of Rava, the Harifa Sakini. He's very sharp, and he'll be able to come up with an answer. Another pshat that I saw the Sharam Tzion Balokha suggest is that here we see that they had this question, and they weren't able to come up with an answer after three young Tovim. He said, "What Rava is the person that is able to answer questions very quickly. Charif Iskina, he's sharp. He cuts and he comes to a solution immediately. Asl Kamei, so they came to him. Amr, Michti, Nishba V'yatsa L'chutz Tanan. We learned in the Mishnah that if there's a fracture and it's mostly covered, Mali Nafa, Mali Isi. It doesn't make a difference if part of the bone is chipped or part of the bone is not chipped. As long as the bone is in, as long as it's mostly covered, it's fine. Amle Ravina Larova, Mislaket Mahu. We have a situation where most of the bone is covered with flesh, but it's not one contiguous piece of flesh, but rather it's small pieces of flesh that combine to cover that bone. Or Misroisis Mahu. What will be the halacha if the flesh covering the bone has been flattened out? Mismaseis Mahu. If the flesh covering the bone has been decayed. And as the Rishonim point out, that even though when we learned Perek Eil Treifus, that the halacha is that if the reya, if the lung decays, then it's not a kosher animal. So Rishonim differentiate between that case and this case. That case, the animal, to be considered a kosher animal, must have a lung. And if that lung decays, it's no longer a kosher animal. It's not considered that it has a lung. Whereas in our case, where the entire issue is just as a covering, the fact that it's decayed should not make a difference. Ask the Gemara, Heichi Domi Mismasis, what exactly does decay mean? Amar Puna Berev Yeshua, Kol Sharefa Kodroi. If it's so decayed that the doctor, the veterinarian, has to cut it away, then it's considered decayed. Ibailuhu, Nikev Mahu. If the flesh covering the bone was punctured, is it considered a valid covering or not? That's the way many Rishonim learn the Gemara. Others explain the Gemara is referring to the bone itself. If the bone has these punctures or the other issues that are now going to be brought up, what is the status of that bone? Could that bone still be considered under any circumstance kosher or not? Niklaf Mahu. But again, we're going to learn according to the first pshat that we're discussing the flesh covering the bone. And Nikev Mahu. Again, if that flesh is punctured, Niklaf Mahu, if it was peeled away from the bone, Nizdak Mahu, if it was split, that means there was enough flesh to cover the bone, but it was split open. Nitel Shlish HaTachten Mahu, if the bottom third of the flesh was missing, can that flesh still be considered a covering for this fractured bone? Toshma, Da'am Ula Amar Rabbi Yochanan, or Harei Kubasar. We learned at the end of the previous year that it is the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan that skin could be take the place of basar. So it seems that Rabbi Yochanan was speaking about this very case, where the skin should take the place of the basar, and he teaches us that it does. Answers the Gemara that it is not necessarily a raya, because Dilma the Kana Mashka today. Maybe he's referring to a case where the skin, this way Rashi explains, where the skin and the bone are right next to each other. In other words, Rashi says that it's at the bottom of the foot, and at the bottom of the foot, that's where there is no flesh, there's only skin and bone. But it could be in a place where there is normally basar, and that basar is missing, it won't be considered an acceptable covering. Aravashi, Kiavina Rapapi. When we were in the yeshiva of Rapapi, Ibarilon, the following question was asked. Nigder Kamintabas Mahu. We have a fractured bone on the animal, And even though most of the fracture, as we have been discussing, is covered by flesh, however, it's separated from the rest of the animal. It's separated, there's a layer that separates it from the rest of the flesh of the animal. What will be the halacha regarding that fracture? Would that be considered an eva hamadodl or not? It says the Gemara, "Upashtan mahadam Rav Yehuda Meraf," and it was answered from this question, for he says, "Dovazeh shu'alti l'chachamim l'roifim." I actually asked this question to chachamim l'roifim, and from here the Pesukim in fact say the Shem Tzion Balacha has a long discussion that when one has this type of a question, he should ask both chachamim, who know the halacha, and roifim, doctors, who could tell him the medical facts. Although he goes on to discuss that it could be that this is only when we're discussing an animal, but when we're discussing human beings, it could be just asking a doctor alone and relying on a doctor's opinion is adequate. Of course, he also goes into a discussion which doctors can or can't be trusted, because and they said if they scratch, the way to heal this is to take a bone and scratch the flesh, and that will cause bleeding, but that will cause that the entire flesh around this bone will become reconnected. Umala rucha, and the flesh will completely regenerate. Avo parzlo, if he were to take metal, mizra zarif, it only causes punctures, it only causes scratching in the flesh, and it aggravates the wound, and therefore it won't regenerate. Amar Papa, and furthermore says Rapapa, Behuda Kana Karba the day. This will only be helpful if the bone if we see that it starts regenerating. Or as Taisha says, if we see that there's liquid, there's some still moisture there, then we see that this will be healed and it's not considered a problem. Says the Mishnah, Hashoichet Esa Behema Umatz Bas Shilzim. If somebody shechts an animal, and in the animal he finds the sack, the amniotic sack, in which the fetus is held. So, as we've been learning, and has been the main subject of this entire perek, the halacha is that if you shecht an animal, whatever is in the animal becomes kosher through the shechita. And therefore, the halacha is that you certainly can eat this shilya. But, says the Mishnah, nefesh hayofet achlena. Only a person who's not that particular can eat it, because it's really something. In fact, the Ravid uses the word perish, waste material on the shilya. And therefore, most people would find it repugnant and it's about to shaksu. Veina metama, it's not able to be mekabel tama, not tumas oichlin, nor tumas nevelis. But if the person decided to eat it, so that decision to decide to eat it gives it the category of food, and at that point, metama tumas oichlin, it does become susceptible to tumas oichlin. Avaloi tumas nevelis. Tumas nevela, even if the person decided to eat it, doesn't give it the shame basar. And since it doesn't put it into the category of basar, it won't be metama tumas nevela. Says the Mishnah Novadin, Shilya Shiyatsu Mitzasa. If we have part of the sack came out of the mother's womb, Hasurba Chila, it may not be eaten even after the Shkita. Because we need to review. As we said at the beginning of this Mishnah, we learned that in this parak many times, Baruch Hashem, that anything found in an animal, it becomes mutter through the Shkita of that animal. However, we also learned in this parak that if the uber emerged, was born prior to the shechita of the mother, then the shechita of the mother would not be effective for the uber. And we learned that when is an uber considered born? As soon as its head emerges. So says the Mishnah, Shil Shiyatsu Miktsasa, if part of the shoya emerged, asur bechila. We can't eat it afterwards, because even the part that remained inside, because we have to be concerned that the head came out with the shoya that came out, and if the head came out, then it's also to be eaten. Furthermore, says the Mishnah, simen vlad v'isha v'simen vlad behema. When you have a shoya coming out, that's an indication of some sort of a birth. And as we just said, not only is it an indication of some sort of a birth, it might be the head came out and the uber is out, and the uber may not be eaten once it came out, and you can no longer rely on the shechita of its mother. Says the Mishnah further, Hamavakere shepila shoya. If an animal is about to have its first baby and it miscarries the sac, yashlichenu l'klovim. Even though there's a concern that the fetus in that sac might be a bechor, the Gemara will explain why we don't have to treat it with any level of kedusha. However, ubu mekdashim, if this animal that has this miscarriage was an animal of hegdish, and then this sac comes out, that sac must be treated with kedusha, and to cover it should be buried. Says the Mishnah, and when it is buried, en kovenas of a precious drachim, it's not buried on the fork of the road, vein tylanas of a ilon, nor is it hung on a tree, neidaki amayrim. The mayrim, as a superstition, would hang this sack on a tree or bury it in the fork of the road to be a simon, a superstition that there should no longer be miscarriages. We may not follow the Darki Hamori. We'll discuss at the end of the year when yes and when not. But here it's a case where we may not, because the Torah says v'loisasek masayim. And as the Achronim explained, the concern is only the concern of the concern is not of loisanachshu, because as the Ksam Sofer explains, loisanachshu only means that somebody makes some sort of a sign, and based on what will happen, he will do something. That isn't what the reason the shilya, that the Mishnah describes, is done with the shilya. It's only some sort of a preventive measure against miscarriage, and that's not in the category of loisanachshu. Menonimili. So the Gemara says that where do we know that if the shilya partially emerged, the halach is that we may not eat that shilya? The Tanah Rabbanan, the pasuk says, kol behemah techelu. We've quoted this pasuk numerous times in this parish. The pasuk says, v'chol behemah mafreses parasa v'shorasa hashesa shtei parasas malz gera v'behemah oisa techelu. The rabbis as a shilya, that the shilya, again, through the shechita of the mother, we may eat the shilya. Yochel afil yotz mitzasa, that halacha should apply even if it partially emerged. Tamaloyim oisai, oisa v'loy shiyasa. Ask the Gemara, michti. Let's try to understand this. We know that ain't shilya b'vloy vlad, that when we have the sack coming out, there must have been a vlad. And once there's a vlad, we know that if the head emerges, then we're not allowed to eat the uber. So if that's the case, lomali kro, why do we need a special pasuk to teach us the halacha that a partially emerged shilya is asur? Answered the Gemara, indeed we don't need the pasuk for that purpose. This pasuk is a cross smachta ba'alma. The main purpose of this pasuk is, as Rashi teaches us, we learned earlier in our perek, that if somebody severs organs of an animal while the animal is still alive, the Gemara spoke about separating the spleen, the Mishnah spoke about separating the spleen or the kidneys, and then we shech that animal, even though of course we'd be allowed to eat the animal, we may not eat those organs that were severed while it was in the animal's, while the animal was still alive. We learned in the Mishnah that the shilya is not matama, not tumas oichlin, and not tumas nevelus. Ask the Gemara, by Rabbi Yitzchak ben Nafka, or chamor sheshokumahu, that we have the skin of a donkey that was cooked extensively. Most mepharshim explain that we're referring to a situation where it was cooked extensively. Mahu, what would be the halacha with that or? Ask the Gemara Lamai. What is the point of your question? Ila Tumas Eichlin. If your question is that should it be susceptible to Tumas Eichlin, Tanina. We've already learned that halacha. And if your question is regarding Tumas Nevela, that also Tanina. We have learned. So why do we? What's your question? Because the Gemara explained itself. Tumas Eichlin. The fact, the halacha regarding Tumas Eichlin, the Tanya, the Braisa says, Ha'orav Ashulya, both the skin or the Shulya, Eim Atam and Tumas Eichlin, are not susceptible to Tumas Eichlin. However, Orash Ashulka, once we cook the Or, so now it becomes edible, Vashulya Shechish Valayim, or once somebody decided to eat the Shulya, that it's going to eat it, Matam and Tumas Eichlin. And as the Chronim point out, the Bryce is being very precise and specific, and even though it's saying that there are situations where the Or or the Shulya are susceptible to Tumah, they're not identical. The Or needs a Maisa, it needs an act of cooking to make it susceptible. The Shulya doesn't need an act. As we learned in our Mishnah, it just requires a decision that you're going to use it for eating. Tumas Nevela, and the question regarding Tumas Nevela, Namatanina, says the Gemara. We've also learned another Braisa, because the Braisa says the Nevlosa, the Torah speaks about an animal that dies in the Tumas Nevela, and the Braisa says, Veloiba Or, Veloiba Tzomas, that this halacha doesn't apply not to the hide, not to the bones, Veloiba Gidin, not to the veins, Veloiba Kanayim, not to the horns, Veloiba Tofayim, not to the hoof. That even when somebody makes this into a stew by cooking them extensively with spices, they're still not susceptible to tumah. So we have this answer as well. So I saw that Rav Shach asks a question. Why would there be a havamina that because they were cooked with spices and made into a stew, they should be susceptible to tumah? The moment that we look and determine if something is subject to Tumas Nevela is at the time of the death of the animal. And at the time of the death of the animal, it wasn't a stew. So why should it be subject to Tumas Nevela? So I saw Rabbi Yoshim says a very nice teretz. He says, certainly the basar, the meat of an animal, of course, it's subject to Tumas Nevela. But if we look at the meat, when the animal is slaughtered, the meat isn't edible. It still requires cooking to be edible. Yet, it's still subject to Tumas Nevela. Similarly, he says, we would think that the same halacha ought to apply to the Or, teaches us, the Gemara teaches us the Braisa that no, that the Or will never be subject to the halacha of Nevela. There is a question, what will be its status regarding Basa B'Cholof? And some, the Noi of Yehuda, suggests that it will not be considered Basa as far as Basa B'Cholof is concerned. Also, there are other Achroinim that disagree and that say that if you make the oil edible, it is considered basar and will be subject to halachas of basar b'cholof. But I saw Moshe says that even if we say that if it's all cooked and therefore it's edible, it falls into the category of basar b'cholof, it will not require melicha like basar normally requires. So the Gemara goes back to the original point. The Gemara asked the question, what is the status of the Or Chamor that was cooked? Don't we have a clear answer from these two brises? They are susceptible to Tumas Eichlin and not susceptible to Tumas Nevela. Answers the Gemara L'Olam Tumas Eichlin. The question was regarding Tumas Eichlin. Hasn't the brisa clearly indicated that the Or could be subject to Tumas Eichlin? Says the Gemara, Shani Or Chamor Demos. The Or of a Chamor is particularly Mos, and therefore it's treated differently than the regular R, and could be, and therefore Rabbi Yitzchak ben Avchi want to know, will it ever be subject to Tumas Eichel? We learned in the Mishnah, the Shilya Shiyah Tzasa, if the Shilya partially emerged from the womb, we have to be concerned, we learned in the Mishnah, that there's a head, that this Shilya had in it a dissolved Uber, and the dissolved Uber, it was the head, and therefore it may not be eaten. Honor the Lazar, Lo Shana, Elish Enemar Vlad. The entire issue here is only where there is no fetus in the sack. Avil, Yeshimai Vlad. If there is a Uber still in the animal's womb, we could safely assume, says Rabbi Lazar, that that Uber was the Uber with the Shulya, and that this Shulya doesn't have in it a connected Eichel Vlad Acher. We need not be concerned that there was maybe another fetus here. We could assume, says Rabbi Lazar, that the fetus that we find in the womb was the fetus connected to the sack, and therefore the sack doesn't, we need not be concerned that there's a dissolved head of an Uber in the sack. And therefore, the sack will be mutter. Machloikis, Ravid and Rambam, when we say that the sack will be mutter, what does that mean? The Ravid says that the entire shilya, that the entire sack will be mutter. Both, certainly the part that still remains in the womb of the mother, but even the part that emerged from the mother, for even though we've learned so extensively in our parak, says the Ravid, that anything that emerged from the mother prior to the Shechita may not be eaten, says the Ravid, Shilya, I quoted the Ravid, this opinion earlier in the Shir, is considered perish, is considered waste, and doesn't have that halacha. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam's opinion is that the discussion is on the Shilya that's still in the womb of the mother. But certainly any part of the Shilya that emerged from the mother prior to the Shechita of the mother may not be eaten, like an aver that emerges prior to the Shechita may not be eaten. Rabbi Yochanan, however, says, Bein Enimai Vlad, Bein Yeshimai Vlad, whether there is or there isn't an Uber in the womb of the mother, Choshen Vlad Acher, we always have to be concerned that there was a Vlad in the Shilya, and therefore we have to be Machmer. So it turns out that Rabbi Yochanan is the Machmer. Ask the Gemara, Rabbi Lazar's opinion represents the Chumra. And according to the way we have their opinion stated, Rabbi Yochanan is the Machmer. Therefore, the Gemara revises what was said. Eli Itmar, Hachi Itmar. On Rabbi Lazar, Lo Shano, Ela Shenik Shur Bevlad. When is the Shilya Osir? If it's tied to, when there's an Uber in the Vlad, it's not tied to that Shilya. Avok Shur Bevlad. If we see a Shilya emerge from the womb of the mother, and there's a Vlad connected, physically tied to that Shilya, then Rabbi Lezer takes a lenient approach and says, Ein Choshen Vlad Acher. But if there's a Vlad in the womb of the mother, even though there's a Vlad in the womb of the mother, that doesn't mean we shouldn't be concerned that there was a Vlad in the Shilya. However, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, on the Eilat Shilya below Vlad, Avol, Yeshim of Vlad, when there is a Vlad in the mother's womb, Bein Shur of Vlad, Bein Shur of Vlad, it makes no difference if that Vlad is connected, is attached to the Shilya or not, Ein Choshen Vlad Acher. If we see a Vlad in the mother's womb, we need not be concerned that there was a Vlad in the Shilya. Whereas Rabbi Lazar's opinion is, we only are lenient when we see that the Shilya is actually attached to the Vlad in the mother's womb. It says the Gemara, Hanadam Rav Yirmiyah, now we understand the opinion of Rav Yirmiyah. Rav Yirmiyah said, B'chumra Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Lazar said a chumra, but Rabbi Lazar says that in order to be lenient on the Shilya, it has to be physically attached to a Vlad in the mother's womb. Says the Gemara, Tanya Kavaseh Rabbi Lazar. And just a word of Agdama to understand this Gemara, the way Rashi explains the Gemara. We know that halacha is, the Torah teaches us, and I always emphasize, this is din d'oraisa that we don't follow bizman hazeh. But the Torah teaches us, isha kisazriya, if a woman has a baby, if she has a boy, she's tameh, no matter what, for a week, and she's tameh for the next 33 days. If she has a girl, she's tameh, no matter what, for 14 days, and she's tameh, no matter what, for 66 days. We have already discussed that the Gemara Masechta Nida quotes machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. If a woman has a gives birth to something that doesn't look like a child at all, Rav Meir says that the halacha is a tumah tahara apply, and we have to treat it l'chumra. She's tummy for 2 weeks, and she's only tahara for the remaining time till 33 days. The Chachamim held that there's no tumah at all. So says the Gemara. If a woman miscarried, and when she miscarried looked like an animal or a bird, the shilya mon, if this shilya that came out is connected to this behemah chayvois that's in her womb, we need not be concerned that there's another child. And as I said, according to the Chachamim, she's completely tahar. But it's not tied. We give her all of the chumras. Since there might have been a child in that sack, and that child might have been a female, so therefore she's tamei for 14 days, like someone who had a girl. On the other hand, there is a question that maybe was only connected to this animal-like form, and there was no other child. And therefore, even though, as we said, that when a woman has a girl, she's tar for 66 days, or for a boy, 33 days, here it may be considered that we have to be concerned that there was no human form at all. There was only an animal-like form, and she doesn't get the tar days at all. Hareni matala shnei v'lada, sheni oimer, shemen nimuach shvir shil shilya. We have to be concerned that maybe the embryo on this sack dissolved, and shimon the mucha shiyasa shishvir, and maybe the sack of the animal was also dissolved. So we see that there's a difference between when the sack is attached to the fetus or it wasn't attached. So we learned in the Mishnah, hamavakeres shepila, if an animal carrying the first fetus miscarried, we could throw it to the dogs. Says the Gemara, my tama. Most animals do have animal-like form babies. However, sometimes it gives birth to something that doesn't have kedushas b'chayr at all. And what is that? Nidba. That means if a sheep gives birth to something that looks like a goat, or vice versa, then there is no kedushas b'chayr. And furthermore, there's a 50% chance boy, 50% chance girl, and b'chor is only by males. So we take the small possibility that it may be a nidma, plus the 50% chance that it was a female. So havla is a churim miyito. So the fact that it may be a zachor remains only a meal, and therefore we follow Rav, and Rav tells us that we need not be concerned that this is a Bechor. And as the Farshim point out, that this is not because we rely on Sveika, rather the Lomdus here is a Lomdus of Rav. However, if the animal was Hegdish and it had this miscarriage of a sack, then to cover. My tama, ruva b'magdishu. Because the halacha is that the vlad of a kachim, the child of kachim, has the status of kachim. And it makes no difference if the child born to the animal that's hegdish is male or female. And therefore, even though there is a small chance that it was a nidma, but a nidma, and the Gemara here is assuming that a nidma born from an animal that's Kaddish is not Kaddish, And as Rishonim explained, the reason being because we followed a moment of birth, and since that's why it's not considered Hagdish, but still, usually a Nidma is not what's born, Roiv time it's not a Nidma, and therefore we have to treat it with Kedusha. We learned in the Mishnah, Vein Kovrin Oisai, but we may not cover it, buried on the fork of the road by the trees, because Dakei Rava, Dakei Mayri. Says the Gemara, Abayi V'Rava Dami Tavayi. Kol Dov Shesh Be'Refuah, anything that that represents a Refuah, Ein Bo Mishum Dakei Mayri. Ein Bo Refuah, but when it doesn't, when it isn't Refuah, Yesh Bo Dakei Mayri. As a Machloikis, we show them how to understand this. Rashi says, any procedure that is performed directly to the wound or to the sick person is considered a refuah. But something like our Mishnah, which isn't done directly to the sick or wound, it's done, they bury it on the road, is considered a lachash. Rashi in Sefer Shabbos gives a different explanation. He says that a procedure whose medical value is not recognized or apparent is categorized as she'ein bo mishum refuah. Anything else is yesh bo refuah, and therefore we may not, perhaps, as the Ran, use a kameya on Shabbos, carry a kameya on Shabbos, or write a kameya on Shabbos for chayla if we don't know that it works. The Rashba and the Ran hold that even unproven procedures are permitted when they're done for healing purposes. However, they do agree that a procedure that was proven ineffective is forbidden. The Shilta Kibayim makes a difference between something that's done for animals versus done for humans. Rav and Abayi permit any type of procedure performed for the healing of a person. The Mishnah, which says it's Asur, is saying that when we use these types of approaches, not for people, but for animals. Ask the Gemara, is that true? But Tanya Ilan Shemesha Peresov, a tree that drops its fruits, soaked with a secret, should be painted with red dye, the Tanya Bavanim, and stone should be hung from it. Says the Marbishlam, the Tanya Bavanim, that we should put on stones on it, kihechi, because the reason it's dropping its fruits is because it has too much energy, the nechesh chelim, but putting stones on it to weaken it, and therefore it won't drop its fruits. A soita b'sikra, a my wiser mutter, answers the Gemara, kihechi delechi inshi v'labai rachmei. The purpose is that people should see that you have a problematic tree, and they'll daven from you. Kiritanya, as we find, v'tamei tamei yikra, the pasuk says regarding the mitzayra, v'tamei tamei yikra, tzarech l'idea l'rabim, he has to let people know that he's unfortunately mitzayra, rabim v'akshon l'av rachmim, and people will daven for him, v'chein misha ariba dover, or anybody that has a problem, tzarech l'idea l'rabim, should notify the public, rachmim v'akshon l'av rachmim, so people should daven for him. And in fact, says the Gemara Ravina, command talina kufs v'dikla, why do we sometimes hang dates on a palm tree that drops its fruit too early? Again, Kamaka Aitana, the people should daven. So as Mefarshim say, this is the source why we make a Mishaberach for a Chayla publicly, even on Shabbos, that when we usually aren't supposed to daven for these types of bakashas, we don't say Refrain on Shabbos, because does it point of tzorich lohidia tzal l'rabim, and the Shabbos by Kriyas HaTorah, when the entire congregation is assembled, that's when tzorich lohidia l'rabim. Furthermore, the Pais can say, from here we see that, say the Pais can, that we, when a person is bevaka chayla, it's just not enough to go visit the person and take him company, but we have to daven for him. When somebody goes to visit an ill individual and he sees that he's bitzar, the Gemara teaches us that one is supposed to be mispal for such an individual. Why does the Torah teach us this lesson by a mitzayra? So the Mefarshim explain, we know that a mitzayra is called an individual who is musgar, who's quarantined.
But Musgrave goes much deeper than that. He's Musgrave is closed off from Hashem because of what he did. And because he's closed off from Hashem, therefore, we have to daven on his behalf. His tefillahs are not being answered. But then I saw other pshatim in the, what this Gemara is teaching us. The Gemara is teaching us, the Farshim say, that why does a person become a Metzora? Because the person only thinks about himself. He's arrogant. He doesn't think about other individuals. So what is the lesson of our Gemara, says the Gemara? Do we have to be the opposite of Metzora? What is the opposite of Metzora? That even if we see that somebody's tree, it's one tree that's dropping its fruit, we would think it's not a big deal. No, if another Jew is suffering, even if it's not something significant, we have to daven on his behalf. And then I saw along the same lines a very deep understanding of our Gemara. If we look at the two situations that our Gemara speaks about when we daven on behalf of someone else, on one case is a Metzora, a terrible situation. A person has this terrible disease of tzaraas. Who knows if and when he'll be healed. He's completely separated in a quarantine from everyone else. And the other case is that Elon Shemesh Pairesov, it's dropping its fruits. He has one tree amongst many trees that are healthy trees. And even this tree, as we see, is only dropping its fruit because it's very strong. So do we have to daven for that? Yes. We have to be concerned for every Jew's issue. Not just the big issues. Not just, Rachmana Litzlan, if there's a Jew who's a Metzora, must we daven on his behalf. We have to daven even for the Jew whose one fruit tree is dropping its fruits. That's the Tzar El Rabbim. We have to daven. But one more part that the Nesiv Shalom says. What is Pshat Tfilas HaRabbim? He says, when we have a Rabbim, we have a large group of individuals connected, whether they're connected in tefillah, or as we're learning in our Gemara, or it's in other situations where we're, Baruch Hashem, perhaps connected in Limud HaTorah. So when we have such a large group connected, we don't know whose tefillah, who has the power that his tefillah should be answered. So we connect ourselves to a Rabbim, and amongst the Rabbim there certainly is a Jew who has that ability that his tefillahs should be answered. Sarach l'idea l'rabim, when we're all connected to a rabbim and one cares for the other, we don't know which one can help the other one, for we have that obligation for one to help the other. Hanu l'pahim ha-makasha, hanu l'pahim ha-makasha, hanu l'pahim ha-makasha.